Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:22 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is March 23rd, and I thought I'd kick off with the Nasdaq because it has reversed an earlier advance and is finishing, or at least in the last hour of trading, is close to the lower side of the range on the day. We've had a really impressive rally, going from 13,000 to about 14,500. So that's a really good move, more than 10% off the lows, and certainly it was on the back of some short covering. So I think we're probably coming to the end of a short covering rally, at least in the short term. Importantly, it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, so that's comforting from the perspective of the bulls. But I think it's also worth highlighting that the Nasdaq is in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is the first area of potential resistance. And we've had this rather odd situation recently where bond yields have been surging higher. And that's created this dilemma for bond investors. What do you do when bond yields are going up at such an aggressive rate? Considering that less than 2 weeks ago, the yield was at about 1.65% and it was at 2.4% earlier on today. So that's a really significant move. And the quantity of debt that was trading with a negative yield has contracted meaningfully over the course of the last couple of months. So not all that long ago, the beginning of 2021, it was up there around 18 trillion, and as of today, it is down to less than 3. So that is basically saying that anyone who has bought and held longer dated bonds over the course of the last 6 years is now losing money. And this kind of volatility that you have in bond markets isn't normal. When you see losses in the order of 15% in short periods of time, well, it does contribute to a lot of angst. And bond market volatility hasn't been this high since 2020. And then prior to that, it was only this volatile in 2008. So when we think about this environment overall, well, it would be easy to think that we're coming to the end of the volatility in debt markets. But the central banks of the world continue to talk about raising interest rates. And some are in a better position to do that than others. Now, the UK, for example, has the Bank of England has raised rates 3 times already. So they're up to 75 basis points. Inflation is running at 6%. It's expected to peak around 8%. And maybe come back down to about 4% or 3% in the next few years. But there's just no way that they're going to be able to raise rates to that extent. But the UK also has a duration of its debt, even accounting for the fact that a lot of the money that was used to buy gilts by the Bank of England is extremely short duration. They still have an average duration on the debt in excess of a decade. Well, for the USA, it's half that. It's more like about 4 years, 4.5 years. So when we start to think about the cost of servicing the debt and the quantity of debt outstanding, countries like the UK have got more bandwidth. They can run deficits for longer, but they're not doing that. They're starting to try and balance the budget early. Well, you would think that that would be positive for the pound. But the pound was in negative territory in here today, and it has been trending downwards for most of the last 6 months. But it's not trending downwards in an especially dynamic manner. And the dollar has been particularly strong. When we look at the pound versus the euro, well, then we're presented with a somewhat different environment where the pound is back testing the 120 area, which represents the upper side of the 6-year base formation, and it continues to hold this really rivetingly consistent sequence of higher reaction lows. When we think though about what's going on in the USA, The stock market continues to be a bastion for anyone who's fleeing the bond market. So, I was pointing out yesterday, 3-month yields are not pricing in the potential for additional rate hikes. But the continued strength of the stock market will only encourage the Federal Reserve to proceed with additional rate hikes. And we're seeing a lot more commentary from various central bank figures talking about a 50 basis point hike. So that's obviously going to put upward pressure on the short end of the curve. But then we can think about the 10-year minus the 3-month spread, and it's still at 184 basis points and rising overall rather than contracting like we see with the 10-year minus the 2-year. So what this has done is create a lot of demand for bonds and notes at the short end of the curve, so basically cash-like instruments. If we then think about the stock market, well, stocks generally should offer some measure of protection against inflation because companies get to raise prices. But that only works as long as sales hold up. And in order for sales to hold up, you need the economy to continue to expand. Well, then it's, I think, what we should also pay attention to is the ability of people to pay. If we look at savings as a percentage of a disposable income, then we get some interesting data. Because during the pandemic, it went through the roof, and since then, it has completely corrected. So, during the massive amount of money that was printed and doled out to people during the pandemic, savings rates went through the roof because people had the money and nowhere to spend it. But now we're back to about 6.4%, which is lower than it was ahead of the pandemic. In fact, it's about as low as we've had at any point over the post-GFC era. And it was really only heading into the global financial crisis that we had savings rates lower than they are today. So we're looking at an environment where the Federal Reserve is raising rates at the narrowest yield curve spread of any cycle. They're talking about how many times that they can do it, and not giving any real consideration to how many it is going to take to cause a recession. And we've had a short covering rally on the stock market. The big question now is whether the lows are going to hold. We're due a pullback, and we have now got a short-term overbought condition. If we simply look at just how quickly the market has rebounded, then if we just simply look at any kind of momentum oscillator, we can clearly see that we're moving back up into overbought conditions. And if we just look at the slow oscillator, or that's just the slow oscillator, if we look at the fast oscillator, then we've already started to see that it's gone to sharply overbought conditions and is starting to come back down again. And this isn't unusual. We're likely to see some chop and change around these levels. So at least some support building is likely. Now, if money is starting to ease back from the panicky environment of needing to put it somewhere, as we saw just masses of bonds moving out of negative territory and yields surging higher. So fixed income investors panicking out of bonds and into equities, and then encouraged by the short covering rally. That hasn't been especially beneficial for gold. But if equities start rolling over and there are still pressures on bonds because of the threat of interest rate hikes forget about the reality, but just think about the threat of interest rate hikes and Fed futures pricing in as many as 9 interest rate hikes this year. I mean, if 7 sounded ridiculous, 9 is just out there in fantasy land. But gold is now starting to steady once more. So when we start to think about there is no alternative, well, people used to say there's no alternative to stocks. But no alternative to stocks implies that equity earnings are going to remain steady to rising. But if we are going to move into an environment where the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates enough to kill demand, well, then that's not good for stocks. So then we have to start thinking about, well, where then is the safe haven? What are the assets that will do well in that kind of environment? And gold certainly starts to tick some of those boxes. If you can't invest in bonds and you can't invest in equities, well, then you invest in near cash items. But if bond yields are rising, near cash items would lose money, so then you look for monetary alternatives, and gold certainly ticks that box. So it was up $20 in here today, continues to look like it's steadying in the $1,900 area, and this is the upper side of the underlying range. Now, if we zoom out and look at this on a weekly basis, it looks like nothing more than a consolidation in the region of the all-time peak. And the process of consolidation that's been underway for the last 18 months looks like it is over, and we're now moving into another bull market phase. We can also think about copper prices, where the price has been going sideways for a year as well. It's in the region of the upper side of the range again, firming in here today. And this is also very much in the region of the peaks from back in 2011 and then from 2008. Nickel has been exceptionally volatile, but we are starting to now see it steadying once more. So we've had the massive move on the upside, and now it has rebounded as well. What I found really interesting was that nickel was the major laggard in the renewable metal or the new renewable energy metals sector. And the reason for that was because there really was a supply response because of the way that the Chinese companies were refining pig nickel. So they were able to bring lower cost production and competitive production costs to the market and satiate rising demand. It is worth reminding ourselves that nickel went on an epic advance in 2007 and 2006 and 7. It went from 10 to 50,000, and that was without the bull market case from electric vehicles. That was all about stainless steel demand from China's industrialization. Well, now China is looking much more towards trying to clean up the air, and they're not nearly as in favor of metal bashing as they used to be. So this lower cost way of producing nickel is extraordinarily dirty, and if it's going to proceed, well, they're going to need the green light from the government, and that may or may not be forthcoming. So it suggests that nickel prices are probably going to trend higher from here. So we're in an environment where there are a lot of competing themes. Front and center has to be monetary policy, because you can't have a bull market without money. So if central banks are tightening and governments are spending less and consumers have eroded their savings, that's implying there'll be less money available. One of the reasons why metals are doing well is because any money that is likely to be spent by governments or credit insurance supplied by governments will go towards renewable energy, particularly because it's no longer about carbon, it's about national security. So the renewable energy sector remains in a support building phase and continues to bounce from the 1,000-day moving average. Of course, it's also getting the added bonus that oil prices remain really quite firm, and we're up another $5 in here today. So this continues to look like a really strong environment. And Russia's not finished with its mischief-making either, because now they're demanding that they're going to get paid in rubles for their natural gas. So natural gas prices in the UK have rebounded. They were up in a dynamic manner in here today. Well, the one thing that anyone looking at a chart can see is that this has been an exceptionally volatile period for natural gas prices. But the most important thing that's happened has been this clear breakout from what was an exceptionally long base formation. And generally speaking, when we see these exceptionally long ranges concluded, then it's very rare that the price is going to come back down into that base formation. So we're in a new pricing environment. Of course, Russia is on the one hand attempting to create demand for their currency, so insisting that they're paid in rubles by Western Europe, then that will create demand for rubles. It will also act as a sanction-busting strategy because everyone who has to buy that natural gas is going to have to pay for it with rubles they get from somewhere. So that's going to have to necessitate that there is some way of getting through the sanctions on financial institutions to secure those rubles. And then, of course, we have much higher prices. And it would certainly be beneficial for any producer to try and renegotiate longer-term contracts at levels that are double or maybe even triple of where prices had ranged previously. So there's a lot of moving parts in the global energy sector, but the most important is that it's not about carbon anymore. It's about geopolitical security and energy independence. So there's certainly going to be money pouring into that. All other factors being equal, having energy independence and security is now a national priority everywhere. So that's most especially true in Europe. Now, when we think about what's going on in various stock markets, we've had short covering rallies just about everywhere, and they're starting to look a little tired. So the FTSE 350 hasn't really, or 250, excuse me, hasn't really gone anywhere for the last 3 or 4 days, and it does look susceptible to at least some pause and consolidation. It's gone up enough, though, that it has a sufficiently large margin to pull back and consolidate above the low from earlier on this month. When we think about the Euro Stoxx 50, then we have a similar scenario where we've had a really powerful rebound, and I suspect at least that we're due consolidation and that it will hold the lows. The benefit of countries like the UK or Europe or Japan for that matter is that they trade at a lower valuation. And Japan in particular has the benefit, in nominal terms at least, of the devaluing yen. So Japan is actively devaluing the currency. They don't have a notion of raising interest rates. They've been looking for inflation for decades, and they're not about to snuff it out now that they've got it. So the yen is likely to trend lower for at least the foreseeable future, and that's likely to boost the nominal price of stocks in Japan. and emerging markets are also benefiting. Obviously, China is a major constituent of all the emerging market indices, and the Hang Seng continues to rebound from the lows put in 2 weeks ago. But again, we have replaced short-term oversold conditions with short-term overbought conditions. So it's not at all, I think, wouldn't be surprising if we see at least some consolidation coming through in here. There are some companies that have been really crying out to start to garner support, and Alibaba, for example, is on the cusp of breaking the downtrend. We're not quite there yet, but at least it's pushing back up into the overhead trading range, and it hasn't been able to do that in the entire bear market. So this is at least an inconsistency for the bear market overall. Now, I think it's also worth looking at some of the bellwethers for this bull market. Adobe has really pulled back in an exceptionally volatile manner. This is the biggest pullback it's had during the entire bull market. Now, when we look at this on even a log scale chart, we can clearly see that the only time that it has come close to testing the 1,000-day moving average was ahead of the breakout in 2012. So it has been going up in a really consistent manner for a decade, and now it's no longer consistent, and it's having difficulty holding support here in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and guidance has been negative. And I think this is one of the more challenging factors that we have here, that guidance has been coming in negative against a background where we have both monetary and fiscal tightening and inflationary pressures still riding high. So that alone is pressuring the growth sector and the technology sector. But then there are the additional headwinds that there's a lot more competition. And a decade ago, Adobe, with its Photoshop, was the go-to product for creating attractive photographs, and certainly for products that going on e-commerce sites. And now there is a lot more cheaper competition, so their moat has been eroded. We can think about the cloud computing sector. I think there's a strong argument that we're in a digitization phase, but growth in this sector went through the roof in 2020 and 2021. And it just makes sense to me, at least, that we're going to get a reordering, that the kinds of companies that benefited most aren't going to be those that benefit in the future. I suspect that it's going to be more about labor-saving devices. So we're going to see more in terms of artificial intelligence, deep learning, and robotics or automation services than strictly just networks. I think a lot of the network has already been done. Then some of the biggest beneficiaries have been the data center owners. But it's important to just pay attention then to the continued ability of the innovation sector to continue to do well, because these are the clients of those data centers. Most of these innovation-oriented companies outsourced their back end to the cloud infrastructure companies. So if they run into trouble, they're going to need less rack space, and that's going to have a knock-on effect for the large companies. And obviously, Amazon is one of the really big ones, so is Microsoft, and so are Google. Well, Amazon has really rebounded exceptionally impressively. Microsoft is still right in the region of the 200-day moving average. Google announced today that they're spinning out their quantum computing service into a separate company, and it has held up better than either of the others. And I think a good part of the reason for that is there's a lot of value in its R&D facilities that isn't really incorporated into earnings. But I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.